This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.
It's Tuesday, the 17th of June. This is your BizNews briefing. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. According to Chief Rabbi Warren Goldstein, Iran was just weeks away from building nuclear weapons. Goldstein says, according to recent International Atomic Energy Agency reports, Iran had accumulated enough 60% enriched uranium to build up to 10 nuclear bombs and had already begun implosion tests used to detonate nuclear weapons. Goldstein says, given how close Iran was to building nuclear weapons, Israel's strike was not only justified, but necessary.
The facts therefore indicate that Iran was just weeks away from possessing nuclear weapons. The leadership of the Iranian regime is on record that it intends to wipe out the Jewish state. Here is just one of the many blood-curdling statements of the Ayatollah Ali Khomeini. He said, "The Zionist regime in this region is truly a cancerous tumor, and it must be cut and shall be cut. It is a plague for the world of Islam. This barbaric and wolf-like regime of Israel, which spares no crime, has no cure but to be annihilated." And here is one of the many statements of Major General Hussein Salami, commander of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, who was killed in last week's daring operation. He said, "This sinister regime of Israel must be eliminated from the geographies of the world." There can be no doubt. Iran's intent to exterminate the Jewish people has been made clear in word and in deed. The Islamic Republic emblazons death to Israel, death to America on banners, in official processions, displays and flight tests ballistic missiles with genocidal slogans against Israel inscribed in Hebrew. Hence, IDF Chief of Staff Lieutenant General Eyal Zamir was right when he told Israel's political leaders a few days ago, "The operation in Iran is an operation to defend the existence of the Jewish people. History will not forgive us if we do not act now. This is the last opportunity."
Staying with the Middle East crisis, Alex spoke to leading economist, entrepreneur and academic, Iranian-born and bred Dr. Iraj Abidian, who shared his unique insights into the escalating battle between Iran and Israel, saying this will be a fight to the bitter end.
So where to from here? It is going to be a long protracted engagement. Netanyahu and Israeli intelligence services know that it's like the European Middle Age duel that people used to make. You go to a duel and not to fight and bruise and come and make peace. One of you comes out live and the other one goes horizontal. And that's because it's existential. It is not a differences of opinion. This is about Netanyahu saying, if we lose this battle, no matter what Americans promise us, no matter what the Russians tell us, no matter what the region assures us, we know that this particular ideology is going to wipe us out. And therefore, we have only one option. This is their argument. Back home, this regime has lost its legitimacy. It's lost its power base. It's squandered, Alec, based on their own estimates. And be prepared for this. $2 trillion over the past 24 years. $2 trillion in pursuit of a protective shield on based on one assumption, that if we have nuclear bomb, nobody, even America, will dare to attack us. And behold, North Korea. That's how you survive. Doesn't matter people like you or not, as long as you're protected against the superpowers and regional powers, that's what you should do, because it's the survival of the regime, not the prosperity and development of the nation and the country and the region that matters, nor do they care about stability of the region. In fact, they have been the engine, as I mentioned, of creating instability. They have attacked the the oil facilities of Saudi Arabia. They've attacked Pakistan. They've attacked everybody that they could in order to, and of course, Iraq and so on and so. So I think where to from here is, I wish I knew, but what I do know, and I have no doubt, that the mullahs, for the first time in 46 years, they are fighting for their existence. So for them, it's no longer a religious ideology. It's for their existential families, people, and their existence, and of course their domination. For Netanyahu and the state of Israel is also existential. So you have now a duel happening, the like of Middle East, but with new technology. And not Middle East, Middle Ages, with two powers, two claimants on authority and existence, and one of them will come out dominant and the other one will go flat.
Meanwhile, U.S. President Donald Trump called for the evacuation of Iran's capital, Tehran, just hours after he urged the country's leadership to sign a deal to limit its nuclear program. Israel, on the other hand, has signaled the strikes will continue. Bloomberg's David Gura reports from the G7 summit in Alberta, Canada.
Well, President Trump is calling on everyone to evacuate Tehran. In a Truth Social post, he also said Iran should have signed a deal earlier. He called on Tehran to de-escalate the conflict with Israel as Mideast tensions threaten to overshadow trade talks at the G7 leaders' summit in Canada.
I gave Iran 60 days, and they said no. And the 61st, you saw what happened. Day 61. So I'm in constant touch. And as I've been saying, I think a deal will be signed or something will happen, but a deal will be signed. And I think Iran is foolish not to sign one.
Well, let's get to Bloomberg correspondent David Gura, who joins us now in Banff, Alberta. David, never mind the practicalities of evacuating a city of 17 million people with some of the worst traffic on the planet. Is there any motivation among the G7 to broker an end to this conflict?
Well, that post on Truth Social from the president came out just after he appeared in front of reporters with Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. So he's certainly ratcheting it up. And as you mentioned, Paul, just a few moments ago, over the course of the last 24 hours, there had been this concerted effort by other members of the G7 to come together and try to issue a statement to both Israel and Iran, calling on them to de-escalate. President Trump decided not to sign that. And when he was commenting on that in that meeting with Keir Starmer, he said that the reason for doing that was he still thinks that diplomacy is the best way forward here. He talked about deal making in this kind of crucible of crisis. We have yet to see sort of what happens as a result of that. The draft document that he pulled out of has been circulated widely, and we'll see if the other members of the G7 codify it. But it's emblematic of the moment we're in, where in the past there would be a kind of wide-ranging communique signed by all of these allies together. There was a recognition going into this event that it was unlikely that the U.S. would agree on a lot of those issues. So what Mark Carney, the Prime Minister of Canada, endeavored to do here going into this summit was to kind of do this issue by issue and allow certain countries to sign on to some documents and not others. This here, a very clear example of one in which the U.S. decided not to participate.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Back at home, the Patriotic Alliance has confirmed in a statement that Liam Jacobs, a DA member of parliament, has joined the party. 24-year-old Jacobs served as a member of the Portfolio Committee on Sport, Arts and Culture. He was also the leader of the Democratic Alliance Students Organization. In the statement, the PA alleges that Jacobs was used in the committee to make the PA look bad. The DA said that it had not yet received a resignation letter from Jacobs. Here's United Independent Movement leader Neil De Beer on Jacobs's walkover.
Liam, who is obviously a rising leader, a person that has leadership quality, and I saw it from the day one. Outspoken, not scared. I mean, you can just see his meetings in Parliament and his position in the Portfolio Committee of Sport, Arts and Culture. But Chris, here's the interesting thing. Not a week after, he goes for Gaitan McKenzie. But he doesn't just go for Gaitan. He actually insults him to the point where Gaitan says to the Portfolio Committee chair that he must be protected because this young man, this child, is rude. And it comes from the questioning that Liam has ferociously climbed into SAFA with Danny Yordan, destroyed Boxing SA, and riddled questions to Netball SA. And I must tell you, I sat back every day and said, well done. Slanele. Because what happens in those sporting federations is people think it's their own wallet. And telling you forthrightly, I was impressed with this young man. But what was very odd was the battle between him and Gaitan McKenzie, where he actually was saying that Gaitan McKenzie's party is a dictatorial party, that Gaitan McKenzie rules, that people get hired and fired in parliament like he wants to. And he set that on record. And that is what spurred that public debate. And because I thought, ooh, these two are never going to get on, which is not a bad thing because then he knows where the lines are and he doesn't fear him. Lo and behold, it's not a week later, shockingly, we hear of the walkover of the very same Liam Jacobs who just roasted Gaitan and the PA that he's joining. Now, I would love to be a small fly on the wall where people would be sitting at the DA, in specifically the leaders that brought Liam into the DA, and find their thoughts, because no matter how they sell it, this is a blow to them on a public relations platform and very specifically on an insider role of a member of parliament that was probably in their leadership program, walking over to their mortal enemy. Because I can tell you there's no love lost between Helen and Gaitan and the Patriotic Alliance.
A recent Social Research Foundation poll shows that 70% believe that South Africa's race-based laws have been enacted to enrich politically connected individuals.
So what we did here is we asked a very simple question. Who do you feel benefits most from affirmative action today? We gave people five options: the poor, the middle class, elites, the politically connected, and business owners. And amongst all voters, about 13% or so said either the poor or the middle class. So that you should read that as the people, them responding that the people who are intended, who the government says is intended to be uplifted by affirmative action, only 13% of people believe that actually affirmative action does the thing that the government says it should do. Then we have about 70% of people, of all people, who say it's either the elites or politically connected. And if you add business owners, it goes up to about 83% of people. And so what this demonstrates, if you look, kind of read across, you'll see that you've got the racial groups included and then ANC, DA, and MK supporters. And basically, you know, just there is this minute differences between the different demographic splits. But the most important thing is that essentially there is wide scale agreement across every single demographic split that the people who are benefiting the most from affirmative action today are not the people who are the government says should be benefiting from it, but are the elites, the politically connected, and business owners. South Africans understand that it is that these policies of affirmative action are entrenching the power of the politically connected, the elites, and rewarding them more than they're doing anything to help the people who the elites say that the policy should help.
So it's hypocrisy.
Entirely. And it's hypocrisy that South Africans completely understand and read through. They see, have correctly assessed that the impact of the affirmative action policies is to enrich the people who already have connections to the political class, you know, especially the 50.1% of all people say it's the politically connected who benefit the most from affirmative action, which is one of those statistics that demonstrate the kind of wisdom that lies inside of the average South African. They're not stupid. They're not short-sighted. They see exactly what's going on.
That brings us to the end of this Biz News briefing. We'll be back tomorrow with more context on both the local and global front. Thanks as always for watching.
This Biz News briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.